From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The press, the news media, reporters have been taking a lot of heat, even more than usual this election season, for being too tough on one candidate or the other, or being too easy on them, or taking sides, or being beside the point in an age of do-it-yourself news on the web. We have an important role in this democracy. Is it getting done? This hour On Point, the news media in campaign 2016 and going forward in the age of President Trump. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Did the news media do its job? Can it still be done? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. It's going to be a challenging time. There's no question about that. It was challenging already for the press to try and figure out this campaign season. Here was just one moment from the heart of the campaign, but it looks forward at the same time. Candidate Donald Trump, in a tense exchange with reporters, press conference at Trump Tower in New York in May, a reporter asks, is this how it's going to be? So contentious between Mr. Trump, then, now President-elect Trump, and the press. Oh, yes, said the candidate.
Yeah, I think you've set a new bar today for being contentious with the press corps, kind of calling us losers to our faces and all that.
No, not all of you, just many of you.
All right, fine. Enough of us. Is this what...
Not you, David.
Is this what it's going to be like covering you if you're president?
Yeah, it is. Let me tell you
we're going to have this kind of confrontation in the press room?
Okay, yeah, it is going to be like this, David.
Oh, boy, here we go. That from the heart of the campaign, and now it's President-elect Trump and... Joining us from Washington, Hadass Gold, covers media and politics for Politico. Hadass, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
From Fort Worth, Texas, we're joined by Cynthia Allen, conservative editorial writer, columnist at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Cynthia Allen, great to have you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And finally, we're joined by Stuart Taylor, Jr., contributing editor for National Journal. He's taught a course on the news media and law at Stanford Law School, co-author of the forthcoming book, Campus Rape Frenzy, The Attack on Due Process in America's Universities. Stuart Taylor, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Hadass, there's been so much written and bemoaned about how the press performed, tried to perform, how it all unfolded in this campaign season. What were the unique challenges of this campaign? I mean, we've had so many presidential campaigns. They're never beanbagged. The press always gets a lot of criticism, always has. But somehow this time it hit a higher pitch. What happened here, Hadass?
I think we had just, you know, unique candidates. On one hand, we couldn't treat one of them especially as a typical candidate, and he was running against a typical candidate. So while we would try initially, I think, to give equal types of coverage to both of them, and that just wasn't working. Donald Trump was like a fire hose of information, both true and untrue, and he had so much history to dig into, and you just never knew what he was going to do or say next. On the other side, we had a more typical politician who we knew more about, but herself had these own stories that were big news. However you feel about emails, for example, I get so much complaints from readers saying, oh, you focus too much on the emails. There was still, you know, the FBI was still looking into this use of emails. It was still a big news story. And I think we were just, you know, the media in recent history hadn't dealt with this type of candidate, Donald Trump, before, who just said so many false things and contradicted himself on such a regular basis and didn't seem to care. Most other candidates would kind of reflect or react to it. And Donald Trump just let it all pass over him.
And Hillary Clinton, not easy to cover for much of this campaign, a very closed campaign, not a lot of access. There, Hadass.
That's true. She went back. Both. It was funny. Both of them kind of went back and forth on whether they were going to have press conferences, how much access they would have, whether there would be an actual pool around them. I am curious if there would have been a different situation had she been much more open to the press and allowed them to, you know, be with her more, have more off the record sessions with her, or just talk to the media more, like Donald Trump, to his credit, did. I mean, if you remember, especially in the beginning of the campaign, he was talking to everybody. I interviewed Donald Trump over the phone for I emailed him about just some random story I never thought I'd get an interview with him for, and he called me right back.
That's a different kind of access. I mean, we've got a lot to dig into here. We've got fake news pouring out, Facebook and Google grappling with that. We've got social media moving in all over in a big new way. Candidates using Twitter, Donald Trump in particular, but social media just a new thing here. Stuart Taylor, just stepping back from this, how do you see the dynamics that led to a sense of we are on new terrain when it comes to how the press is grappling with this campaign? What set the table for that, Stuart?
Well, I think Hadass captured a lot of it, maybe most of it. I saw a phrase used by David Falkenflik of NPR that I think captured a lot of it, too. He said the election result was a repudiation of the idea that the nation's top leader should care about the facts. Now, in journalism, really across the ideological spectrum, caring about the facts is kind of the gold standard. And you expect candidates to at least try to act as though they care about the facts and not to say things that are obviously untrue, that can be disproven in 30 seconds, not to contradict today what they said yesterday. That was a big part of it. But I also think it's not all new either. I think there were at least five things going on in this election that aren't new at all, but that the Trump phenomenon and Hillary Clinton's particular problems pushed it to new levels. And I'll just quickly cite them. Bias. There's really no national news outlet that I trust to tell me the whole truth anymore. I'm not sure there could be, given how polarized we are. Horse race journalism, too much predicting, too much focus on polls, crowding out.
And then not good prediction in the end. Okay.
Not good predictions. But I think part of it is, should we be so much in the prediction business at all? We got to do some of it. But but when it crowds off, most people have a limited attention span, limited time for news. So the more time you spend talking about who's going to win, the less time you spend talking about what they
stand for. Yep, old problem there.
Sensationalism. Speed, meaning the news cycle, and profits. All of these factors are driven by profits. They're also driven by technology and by polarization. And so to some extent, it's not the media's fault that some of these things are so problematic. I think it is the media's fault that there's so much bias, mostly left bias, but in Fox News, right bias.
I mean, sensationalism, it was hard to avoid that tenor in this campaign season where there were so many sensationalist things being said. Cynthia Allen, you're there in Texas. You're fairly conservative as a columnist. What about fairness and the media in this election season?
That's an interesting question. I write for a paper in a very red county in a red state, and I'm still frequently accused of being liberal, which I think is really interesting. And so I think there is a sense among not only our readership, but just among people in general, that the media is monolithic, and they don't really understand. This is a problem that I've seen, that they don't really understand that there's straight news and there's commentary, and that's because they just see everything coming at them as being biased. I get emails and phone calls from readers all the time who say things like, your job is to report the news, it's not to give me your opinion. Well, that's exactly what my job is. I'm an opinion writer. But they just see everything that's coming out of the media as being biased, and we haven't done a very good job of drawing the distinctions for them because so much of what we call reported news already has a slant to it. I think that television news is probably responsible for most of this. So many times people are watching, they're watching a panel on CNN or Fox or something like that, and you have a journalist, and then you have a subject matter expert, and then you have a pundit, and you have a hack, and they see everything.
Did you say a hack? You mean as a political...
Yes.
A straight-up political person, and we had those both from the Clinton and from the Trump campaigns paid by CNN this year.
Exactly, and people watching it just see they believe that all of those people represent the news organization, that all of those people are speaking for CNN, when that simply isn't true. And even if it's it says explicitly and underneath on the scroll or the screen who they are, that's not what people are receiving. They're just receiving that these people are news people and they're reporting to me with bias.
Do your readers, Cynthia, do they want the facts or do they want affirmation of what they believe?
I would hope that they want the facts, but I think that we're especially in a time where there's so much news is so accessible via social media and all these other means and mediums. We tend to read what reinforces what we believe. I mean, I think that everyone kind of does that, and we can curate our own news these days. You can go to a website that. You can go to Breitbart, or you could go to a left-leaning news site, and you can just read all of these stories that confirm what you already think. And so I think a lot of people want that. Very few people read the entirety of a newspaper these days or just read straight news stories.
News is changing. The media environment is changing. Readers and viewers and listeners are changing. I mean, Hadassah Gold, when you step back, and we're going to dig in here on many fronts, but was this coverage, in the end, a fiasco or a decent job in a wild campaign in a changing news environment? What's your bottom line?
I do think that for the most part, the media is getting kind of a bad rap, and maybe I'm biased in favor of the media because we're part of it. I think that we covered the candidates quite well. I think people went into the voting booths and pretty much knowing who these people were. And we saw a lot of that from the exit polls and people who said that they didn't necessarily think that Donald Trump was maybe prepared to be the president. However, they still voted for him. So they knew that he didn't necessarily have, let's say, the national security qualifications for something, but they still voted for that person over another. I think that the coverage of the candidates, just like in any situation, was probably focused a lot on the horse race, and there was a lot of this scandal and, you know, the breathless coverage. But you'll get that, you know, no matter what. I do think something that the media perhaps didn't do as well, and that's because we love to focus so much on data, was that we didn't go out as much as maybe we could have into these communities that switched to Donald Trump this year. I keep bringing her name up because I talked to her about this. Her name is Selena Zito. She used to be a reporter for the Pittsburgh Tribune, and just like many newspapers, she took a buyout, and the newspaper,
meaning she's no longer working. They bought her out. She's not on the job anymore.
Exactly, after 11 years, yep. And she was in a unique position, writing about politics. She's an editorial writer, so she's a columnist, but kind of would go out and talk to people. But she saw this coming, and part of that was because she was out in the community, living with them, talking with them, and it wasn't based on data, but that anecdotal evidence was useful in the end.
Of course, it's harder for that to filter up to the big media when so many local press outlets are in trouble, cutting their staffs, just as in that example. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the role of the news media in the 2016 campaign, what it got right, what it got wrong, and journalism in the age now of Donald Trump. Cynthia Allen is with us, editorial writer, columnist at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, with us from Fort Worth, Texas. Hadassah Gold is here, covers media and politics for Politico out of Washington. Stuart Taylor Jr., contributing editor for National Journal, is with us, author of Campus Rape Frenzy. You can join us as well. Was it tough enough, the media, true enough, clear-sighted enough this year? Was it fair? How did it do with Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump? Was the media too easy on Donald Trump, too tough on Donald Trump? And same questions on Clinton. Is the news media being eclipsed by social media, by tweets and Facebook news feeds and fake news, for that matter? It could get pretty wild at many points in this campaign. A lot of news channel coverage wasn't really reporting, as Hadassah was saying, out around the country, but discussion, debate, verbal brawls on studio sets. Listen to Scott E. Nell Hughes, a Trump surrogate, and Republican commentator Tara Setmeyer, part of a panel on CNN Tonight with Don Lemon, go at it over videotape of Donald Trump bragging to Billy Bush about his way with women. Sounds more like Jerry Springer than the news, even though the issues were very serious.
This is insanity.
And how can you justify Hillary Clinton being in the White House, who puts bodies, puts people in body bags, and lies to the mother and makes fun of the mother?
And she's,
that's why I'm doing that, because she lies to mothers.
The Republican Party, if the Republican Party had put forth a candidate that was competent,
you know, I really can't stand this.
The question is, have you no decency? Have any of you no decency?
Where is the integrity? It's despicable.
Yeah, where is the integrity in supporting Hillary Clinton, Tara?
I'm not supporting Hillary Clinton.
Yes, you are.
This is bigger than Hillary Clinton. It's about the culture in our country.
No, it's not right now.
It's about our country and the culture that
we are accepting. You will rule the day your daughter sees this.
All right, everybody, one at a time.
Okay, boy, it sounds like gibberish. That was a part of the coverage. Of course, politics can be wild, and we've heard that kind of thing before. This kind of thing, though, I'm not so sure. At his rallies during the campaign from a major candidate, Donald Trump routinely pointed out the press at the back of the audience, accused them of lying, lowballing his crowds, and a lot more. Here was a rally last December. This is Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. He pointed at little Katie Couric, he said, of NBC, and accused her of dishonesty, said the mainstream media wants to surrender the U.S. Constitution to Sharia law.
It's disgusting. It's disgusting. So we talk about the media, the mainstream, and by the way, some of the media is terrific, but most of it, 70%, 75%, is absolute dishonest, absolute scum. Remember that. Scum. Scum. They're totally dishonest people.
With reference to little Kitty Tour, I should say there. Cynthia Allen, have you ever heard that kind of rhetoric from a major party candidate on the presidential campaign scene before?
Certainly not in my lifetime. It's interesting that you say that and bring that up. I was talking with my sister a short time ago, and she was watching, I guess C-SPAN was replaying presidential debates through the years, and she was watching, I think, one of Ronald Reagan's debates, and she commented to me that, you know, the candidates are, they wait for the other candidate to finish, they stop, and they refer in a very civil manner to their opponent. There's no interrupting, there's no name calling. I mean, you know, I think in the news media, when you have candidates who are constantly assailing you, and when you have candidates who are speaking like that to other people and about other people, it kind of sets the stage for how, you know, how you have to report. It certainly makes life more difficult for you. And, you know, I think Hadass was saying that we had a very unusual candidate this cycle, and that it made you know, everything that we have to do much more challenging. And I think it put us on the defensive in a way that we hadn't been in the past.
We had David Folkenflik with NPR, Stuart, saying it's been decades, he wrote, since the press has been so owned by a major candidate, by which I guess he meant so sort of wrapped around the axle of a candidate. Not that Trump could or would tell them what to say, but the first there was the fascination in the primary season, and then there was the kind of the obsession as this headed toward the general election, and the sense of just being not sure how to handle somebody who was treating a presidential run in such a different way. How do you think the media handled that challenge, Stuart?
Well, especially in hindsight, I don't think they handled it well. And they get criticism for making Trump as well as for bias against him because they gave him so much free airtime, as you pointed out. And that's what he rode to victory was free airtime. Now, I think the people at CNN and elsewhere that were giving him all this free airtime, I doubt any of them voted for him. And they didn't want him to win, and they didn't think he was going to win, and therefore they didn't see the free airtime as a problem. But then, you know, and to the extent that they were opinionating, and there was an awful lot of bias from the New York Times, from the Washington Post, frankly. I mean, there was a lot I didn't like about Trump. So I didn't write much about the campaign, but what little I wrote was very anti-Trump and would have given the appearance to a pro-Trump reader of, well, this guy's biased because he's attacking my guy.
But you're calling the Times and Post biased. What's the difference?
I think it's that they have been – it's a fair question. I think it's that they have been showing bias against conservatives long before – Trump was a factor, and therefore it's a little bit like the boy crying wolf when they do the same thing to Trump that they did to Romney, that they did to Reagan, and so forth. People who liked Romney or Reagan are thinking, well, there they go again.
He's not – I mean, it's, sorry to jump in here, but
the,
yeah, the, so Bill Maher actually made a reference to this. Bill Maher is an HBO host on Friday nights. He's definitely not a journalist, but he was talking the Friday after the election, and he apologized on his show to Republicans and say, we always freaked out over George W. Bush and over these Republicans and over Mitt Romney, and you know what? We were crying wolf. We were wrong, and now the real wolf has come. And nobody listened. And I think that you have a point there in what you're saying. And the some of the cable news presidents, including Roger Ailes and Jeff Zucker, have said maybe we gave him too much attention. But at the same time, as I like to remind people, it's not the media who went into the voting booths and voted. It's the voters who did. And if you look at the polls, he was doing pretty well almost as soon as he announced.
We had Jack Schaefer writing saying the press succeeded in exposing Trump for what he was. Voters just decided they didn't care. One of your colleagues there for Politico, of course, they've got conservatives, as you say, saw bias here. This is Molly Hemingway, the Federalist, conservative libertarian online journal on last Sunday on CNN with CNN's with Brian Stutler, looking back on media coverage of the campaign. Here she was slamming the media.
This was a complete failure at every step of the process during this entire campaign. The media definitely, they clearly and overtly and even told us that they wanted Hillary to win, and they gambled everything, including their credibility, on defeating Donald Trump and electing Hillary Clinton, and they lost.
Hadass, you can say bias against conservatives, but then here you have a very unusual candidate who was not sticking to facts very often and was not being transparent in the way that people traditionally have about his taxes, his business, and more? Were the Times and Post wrong to try and go hard at those things for, isn't it their job?
I think it's absolutely their job. And they went hard after him. They went hard also after there was lots of stories about Hillary Clinton and her foundation. There were stories, obviously, about her emails. I mean, who broke the story about Hillary Clinton's emails? It was the New York Times and they about her using a private server. And so when people complain about the liberal media and the bias and whatnot, I always point back to, like, where did you read those first stories that were, you know, something that you didn't like about Hillary Clinton? Normally it was in this mainstream media that people always complain about.
Let's go to Chris, calling from Bowling Green, Kentucky. Chris, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a ton of comments, but I'll just try to limit it to one. The thing is this, you know, the media failed on the level that they never probed Hillary Clinton. She would always shut down any sort of impromptu press question. And if you think about it, it goes back to the Obama campaign. They did the same thing. They never took questions. They just said, here's the message of the day. And now for the press to sit there and cry foul about Donald not giving them, you know, a heads up on his movements is disingenuous.
Well, there's two different things there, Chris. One is movement, and I mean the coverage now as president-elect or coming as president. There's also coverage during the campaign. I hear you there. I mean, there were lots of big stories done about Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, Hillary Clinton. I mean, there's reams over the years on Benghazi and emails. It's not as if they were ignored.
But they never sit there and said, Hillary, what happened here? Because if they did, she'd shut them down. She'd shut them out. And it was something that she learned from the Obama administration.
Chris,
Obama camp when in 08.
Let me ask you, you also are suggesting that you don't think the press should be closely covering the president-elect or Donald Trump when he becomes president? I mean, it is a tradition of a long time now that the press is with the president, so Americans know what's going on with their top leader. You think that's going to go?
But is it his a press right to sit there and have him publish his, you know, his personal and private schedule every day? You know,
well, he is the elected leader. He is a public figure now, the most public figure in the country. Hadass, pick up Chris's question.
So I understand why people are like, why do you care if he went to a steakhouse? Here's why it matters. When there's a few different reasons. Number one, it's in everybody's interest. It's the first draft of history. The president's schedule, usually like their official schedule, isn't released till after the president. And so in this way, we know what the president did every day. And that's important because this is now the leader of the free world. And literally markets can rise and fall based off of what he does or what he's doing. I don't know if anybody remembers the AP once got hacked and they tweeted that there was a bomb at the White House and President Obama had been injured. And immediately the stock market fell hundreds of points. Mm-hmm. And so with the media there, this something similar happened with Dick Cheney. He was once flying and there were reports that something had happened to his plane and everybody started freaking out. But because the media was with him, they could report back, no, everything's fine. This is incorrect. On 9/11, there were reporters with George W. Bush, and George W. Bush and his team kept the reporters with them because they knew that they wanted to have these types of observers to history who could get the word about what was happening. Without the media, with Donald Trump, you know, they're not going to be in the rooms with him. They're just going to be kind of outside, and that gives them the opportunity to ask those questions that this caller is saying that people weren't asking Hillary Clinton. They get to ask those questions then. They can at least shout them at them and try to get a response. That's what they've been doing at Trump Tower every day. And also, this sounds really morbid, but it's also kind of a body watch. You know, if you're watching the Netflix show The Crown, Winston Churchill in that show hides his stroke, not only from the Queen, but from everybody for 2 weeks long. Mm-hmm. You kind of want to know how your president is doing.
Or look at Ronald Reagan when he was shot in the street. The press was right there.
Exactly. And so they can say how he's doing and what he's doing. And that is so vitally important because I understand if you trust the president with all of your heart and you believe that they will do what is right. But there is always going to be need to be some kind of watchdog element of the media and just recording for history what he's doing.
Cynthia Allen in Fort Worth, Texas, is that now suddenly somehow too much to ask? We had Robert Costa on from The Washington Post today. And he talked about seeing the shattering of norms when it comes to the press in the Trump, era is emerging here. does a democracy not deserve that kind of awareness of what's going on with its elected president?
No, I mean, I think Hadass made some great points. I think, you know, that's our job in the media. That's our responsibility. And I do think that most people want that and care about what's going on all the time. You know, maybe they're not as interested in every movement that Trump is making, you know, in Trump Tower right now. But I think they still want the media to be on top of candidates. And I think to the point that the caller, I think, was trying to make is that, you know, I think that the issues that developed during this election cycle go back to, you know, the beginning of the Obama administration, and to a certain degree to the Bush administration too. You know, there was not the kind of access in the Obama administration that there should have been. I mean, in my previous life, I worked in a public affairs office for the George W. Bush administration before I came to journalism, and once I left, once, you know, Obama had come to office, I used to get calls from reporters in my new job at a trade association. I would get calls from my old reporter saying, do you have any contacts at the Justice Department? Because no one in the public affairs office will call me back. No one in the public affairs office will give me any information. Can you help me? I mean, I didn't know anyone because it was a new administration. But, I mean, that to me was very telling about the fact that the Obama administration wasn't very open and wasn't transparent. And the media, I don't think, pushed them as much as they should have. And we also saw this sort of unprecedented growth of executive power under the Obama administration. And I think a lot of people, especially people in the part of the country where I am, that really bothered them. The media talked a lot about substance, but they didn't talk a lot about process. And they didn't go after, you know, the Obama administration on taking, you know, and taking some of these sort of these extra...
Will your neighbors be upset if it's the Trump administration putting up those walls or higher, Cynthia?
I mean, I certainly hope they will, because I hope that it's about process. But I do think that is part of what caused this phenomenon, that they, you know, that's why they're upset with the media for not, you know... For now, you know, the media is upset that, you know, we're not getting access to Trump, but we didn't complain about it as much under the Obama administration. And so I think that's what this caller was trying to express, and that's what a lot of people hear. You know, that's what I hear from readers a lot.
Ben in Springfield, Illinois, land of Lincoln. Thanks for calling, Ben. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm kind of surprised that I can't believe how surprised the media is, to be honest with you. I watched Trump. Some reason I just figured he was going to win over a year ago when I saw him. Wasn't necessarily a big fan, didn't think he had everything figured out, but the media had just no idea what to do with any of this stuff, and I don't know how it was even a phenomenon other than they're completely all one-sided to their biased opinions.
Well, I mean, I'm open to that argument, Ben, but it is unusual in American history for a billionaire outsider who has never been elected to any public office or served in the military to come in and become president. That there's no precedent for that.
Correct, but people don't even care about that.
Mm-hmm.
They're caring about what the character of this person is. The way I see it is, if let's say you're the man of the house, and for years now the kids have been out of order. You've got 20 kids, and they're all screaming and hollering. Everything's wrong. Race issues are flaming up. But now they said, now Trump's going to inflame race issues. Well, even though everything else was already going on, immigration, Muslim, blah, 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 blah. And then now you've got Trump standing up saying, I really don't care about all that stuff because I think it's minor. We need to get back to business. We need to get back to working, and we need to fix this system.
I mean, he did, in fairness, he did say he cared. He said everything was a mess. Everything is really dreadful. But you're right. I guess you're right. He says, I'm not going to focus on those things. Stuart Taylor, Donald Trump sort of described a reality and then put himself forward as the solution to it. Was he tested sufficiently?
Oh, I think the media tried to test him. And as has been pointed out, you know, his supporters really didn't want to hear what the media was telling them. And the media also tested Hillary Clinton. So I think the problem with the bias was more what they came in with rather than what was added to it. But I think identity politics and the media's attitude toward it is also a big issue, and I could elaborate on that.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Blue Apron, providing pre-portioned, fresh ingredients with easy recipes delivered to your door. Check out this week's menu and get 3 meals free with free shipping at blueapron.com/onpoint. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the role of the news media in the 2016 campaign, what it got right, what it got wrong, and journalism in the age of Donald Trump. Cynthia Allen's with us from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Stuart Taylor Jr. from National Journal, Hadass Gold from Politico. You can join us. How do you think the media did? Is the news media being eclipsed by social media, by tweets, Facebook news feeds, fake news? Does the public still want facts? Does the news media deliver that? And what do you see coming in the years of covering President Trump? Lots of talk about whether the right approach was taken during the Republican primary. Did the media make Donald Trump? Was it fair to Bernie Sanders in the Clinton-Sanders contest there? And then in the general election, was there bias? Was there prejudice? Was there a blind spot? Were people tested more sufficiently here on the facts, on what they were putting forward? It wasn't easy to do. All the way back in June, CNN's Jake Tapper spent over 5 minutes trying to, and that's a lot in TV time, face it, trying to pin down candidate Trump on his accusation that Gonzalo Curiel, the judge presiding over that lawsuit at Trump University, settled today for $20, $25 million, I guess, saying he couldn't rule fairly because he's of Mexican descent, Trump had said. Said he's just Mexican. Trump had promised to build a wall along the Mexican border, and so Trump kept dodging the question on whether his comments were racist, as some Republicans and many Democrats had said. Here's part of that exchange.
I don't really want to litigate the case
you have to.
Of Trump University.
Because what if he was giving me fair rulings, I wouldn't say that.
My but question is,
Jake, if you were giving me fair rulings, I wouldn't be talking to you this way. He's giving me horrible
but
rulings.
I don't care if you criticize him. That's fine. You can criticize every decision. What I'm saying is, if you invoke his race as a reason why he can't do his job.
I think that's why he's doing it.
But
is it that's why he's doing it.
Try and pin that down. Difficult to do. Donald Trump's certainly not repentant at all there. And then there's the issue of, did the press see what was coming here? We see the result in the end. Here's CBS News election director Anthony Salvanto and anchor Nora O'Donnell in October tracking the polls and predicting a blowout victory for Hillary Clinton.
Anthony, the way you've got this now, likely 341 electoral votes.
Wow.
For Hillary Clinton, you only need 270 to win. That suggests a blowout.
It does at this point. You know, it's not over, but it does. You know, it's even the case now where we've started to see some reliably Republican states, places like Georgia, places like Arizona, that just don't vote Democratic, have started to get close.
Of course, there was James Comey, the letter and all that, but no, it was not a blowout for Hillary Clinton by any means. Went the other way entirely. Lots of callers for the three of you. Mary in Wild Rose, Wisconsin. Mary, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to call about, I just got internet the weekend before the election. I was so excited. And I was Googling and YouTubing, trying to find different, I was astounded. I'm 65. I live in a really small town. I can't even get FM radio inside my house.
What did you find on the internet, Mary? What did you find?
I was looking for the North Carolina speech that I had read about in the New York Times about his speech in North Carolina of President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And when I YouTubed it, and I could tell, I'm savvy enough to know that these couldn't possibly be right. These videos that were up, because they had him like, looking where he was like pushing out of the podium and he had this like vile face, and finally I had to scroll down to find the real one.
So it was some kind of what, bogus or fake presentation that was tagged with North Carolina?
Yeah, they were fake videos. And then so I went and I was talking to a younger person about it, and they said, oh, well, that's astroturfing. Well, I didn't know what that was. And then I Googled astroturfing, and first you get the definition of it, and then there were some articles below that about the 10 worst astroturfers.
Mary, let us pick it up. There's been all kinds of fake news. This has been a big issue just in this last week. Of course, it would, you know, for some time now, but Hadass, you've got on Facebook in the news feed there, and Google, and Mary's there at YouTube, but Facebook news feed in particular getting really just crazy assertions in fake news stories that got lots and lots of traffic. And in particular, in the home stretch to the election campaign, it can sound like a kind of fringy, marginal thing. But is it, Hadass?
I mean, the fake news has become mainstream now, I would say. I mean, when you have something like 40% of people say that they get their news at some point from social media sites such as Facebook, the fact that there was a BuzzFeed did an analysis and they said the 20 top performing bogus election stories did better on Facebook in terms of shares, reactions, comments, you know, interactions with them than the 20 top performing stories from places such as the New York Times, Washington Post, and NBC. So that means that the fake stories got more attention. More people probably saw them than real stories.
And they found they overwhelmingly favored Donald Trump.
And they overwhelmingly favored Donald Trump. And there was actually, the Washington Post interviewed one of the people who creates these sites. Now, these sites often look like real news sites. And sometimes the URLs are even very close. They'll say abcnews.co instead of .com.
Yeah.
And one of the people who creates these sites and creates these stories said that he was making something like $10,000 a month from ads that would get placed on these sites. Now,
you put out a flashy headline says Pope endorses Donald Trump. Wasn't true, but put it out and people click through just to see what, and there's an ad there, and so he gets paid.
Exactly. And now recently, Facebook and Google are starting to realize that they need to handle this, because as much as they might claim that they are not news producers, that they're not content makers, that they are just platforms, they're like the town message board, they do share some responsibility in this, and they obviously don't want to be associated with this type of fake news. And so they just announced that Facebook said that they're going to cut down on these fake news sites being able to make money off of the Facebook ad platforms. And Google is doing the same thing. Twitter has its own issue with harassment, and they have started to push hard against harassment. So now we're seeing kind of this new era of social media sites starting to take things into their own hands. Obviously, if you cut off their money, then they might not be able to, or they won't be as likely or to want to spend the time creating these fake news.
But these became real factors in this campaign. And some of it is just because people see news, fake news. It's totally wrong. But also the kind of despoiling of trust here. Interesting, President Obama in Berlin yesterday at a press conference with the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, really got into this. He talked a lot about it in the press conference, saying that, you know, hey, not all news is equal. Some of it's true, some of it's not. And if the two start to look the same, said the president, democracy suffers.
Because in an age where there's so much active misinformation, and it's packaged very well, and it looks the same when you see it on a Facebook page or you turn on your television, where some zealousness on the part of a U.S. official is equated with constant and severe repression elsewhere. If everything seems to be the same, and no distinctions are made, then we won't know what to protect. We won't know what to fight for.
President Obama struggling. You can hear him there trying to think through the implications of bogus news. I mean, Stuart Taylor, I mean, you have seen, we've all seen all the cutbacks in the traditional press. You got buyouts and cutbacks. And then at the same time, this onslaught of junk. Are we at risk of our understanding of what news even is or what qualifies or respect for factual reporting just somehow floating away, Stuart?
Very much so, I think. You know, the old journalistic cliche, you're entitled to your own opinions but not to your own facts. Well, now a lot of people are sort of entitled to their own facts, not only through the fake news phenomenon but just through the slanted news phenomenon, which is also aggravated by social media, because social media people read stuff that was sent to them by their friends who already believe what their friends believe. And so if you have a lot of basically true but rather slanted news coming from these outlets on the right and those outlets on the left, then people filter it through their social networks, then people on the left are reading only news that, you know, makes the left sound it's right. People on the right are doing the opposite. People do not have a common core of facts on which to base their decisions and opinions. And that was not really true, say, in the time when we all tuned in Walter Cronkite on CBS News, or when everybody read the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal, and you could come to some reasonable consensus about, okay, here's what's happening. Now let's argue about what's good and bad about it. Now there's no consensus about what's happening.
And it may not just be even partisan. It can just be plain up junk that's thrown out there. Cynthia Allen, then we come to the issue of the press anticipating the outcome. And it was very clear that overwhelmingly it was not a Donald Trump victory that was anticipated. How do you interpret that?
Well, I mean, I think we're all guilty in the news media of confirmation bias. I think that, I mean, nobody could anticipate this in part because we didn't do a good enough job at getting to some of the people who were Trump voters and the people who would have told us that this was definitely going to happen.
I mean, we had plenty of callers right here who would call in from exactly the areas and states that went for Trump and say, we've got just wall-to-wall Trump signs here. Haven't seen a Clinton yard sign, you know, in weeks. I mean, it's not as though people on a show like this, they wouldn't call in and just tell us. They told us.
Right, right. And we didn't, you know... I think the media did do some things right. I think we did have there was some really good reporting from the field. There was some good particularly print news stories or online news stories where they really tried to capture what Trump voters were saying. But I think we all just assumed that it wasn't possible because this was he was such a bizarre candidate, and you know we kept seeing these polls that confirmed what we believed, and so you know that does affect our reporting. You know the clip that you played of the two folks on CNN saying a week before the election that it's going to be a landslide for Hillary. We all believed that, and so that's what we continued to write. And I don't even know that we let our imaginations go, you know. Go to what a Trump administration might look like. I know I certainly didn't, and I'm an opinion writer.
I mean, so. I'm looking at a list here, and I wonder about this. You're on the op-ed page.
Mm-hmm.
The papers, the top 50 newspapers endorsements in the country, just overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. I don't know if there's a single Trump. I don't see a single Trump one here. A few just gave no endorsement in Indianapolis and the Oklahoman and the Pittsburgh Post Gazette. No endorsement, but overwhelmingly they endorsed Hillary Clinton. Was that because because they thought she was going to win? I guess their editorial writers, separate from their news pages, just judged that she'd be the better president. We've got a listener now writing, well, you know, having endorsed Hillary Clinton by a wide margin, even conservative newspapers that had never endorsed a Democrat before, listener asked, do you expect these papers now to cover Trump critically or indulge his misstatements of facts and political style, or to be fair, to be straight, what about the endorsement and the coverage, Cynthia?
Well, our paper, we did not endorse Clinton, but we did say we kind of did a USA Today, and we said, you know, don't vote for Trump because he simply isn't qualified.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm the conservative on the board, and I agreed with that analysis. And you know, I mean, I think it's going to make it tough for papers to go after Trump and you know they're going to have to regain some of that trust because we do need to be a good watchdog of the Trump administration we should have been doing with all the administrations past, and I think that's where we failed. So but now I don't know if it was Stewart who said that this is sort of a boy cried wolf phenomenon. You know, we have all this ground to make up to regain trust from people and to help them. We need to ensure that they see us as being, you know, honest brokers here and being fair in our coverage. You know, and for papers who, you know, like you said, I don't think a single paper endorsed Trump. I think it's going to be even harder for some of us to try to regain some of that trust and to let people see us as doing this fairly.
I mean, maybe you were right, but Hadass Gold, what's it going to take for the press to do good, close coverage of the Trump administration? What's your advice looking forward here with the very overt and explicit hostility that the president-elect has expressed for the press and already breaking norms of access?
It's really difficult because sometimes you obviously need access to the principals in order to get information, get stories, and there's a balance that journalists have to play between trying to get that access, which means that, you know, you have to deal with these people who, if you write something that makes them so angry they never speak to you again, you're not going to have that access. So you just have to always be fair and tough and find other ways around this. I mean, we're dealing in a very unusual environment. This is not, you cannot treat it as a typical administration. And so what that means is that you can do hard reporting on Donald Trump and his administration, and you can do very fair reporting about him and his administration, and not in ways that we might have typically done in the past. We're seeing this right now with the press doing a stakeout of Trump Tower, for example.
They're standing down by the elevator in the lobby.
Yeah, and they're just trying to catch anybody and everybody that they see coming through. I think it'll be very difficult, especially in a way that can hold the trust of those people who voted for Donald Trump and see the media as completely against him. And I do think that he is the president now, and he deserves a measure of respect from the media that they need to show him. And I have a feeling we're going to see some members of the media who will have trouble with that. But I think that will go a long way in saying, okay, he's the president now. We treat him with a certain level of respect, but at the same time, we will hold him to that presidential level.
I mean, you've got such a divided country. You've got people saying, more respect. You've got others saying, Stuart, don't normalize this man as president. But he is president. What's your advice to the news media now in covering Donald Trump going forward, Stuart?
Yes. Well, I think they should continue to be as hard as they should be on lies, on misstatements, on bigoted statements, on everything he does that would have been deplored across the board ideologically, conservatives as well as liberals, until this odd phenomenon happened. That we shouldn't back off of that. But I think we should take extra care first to make sure that the evidence precedes the judgment, as opposed to just throwing out accusations that people are going to reject out of hand. And second, to make sure that their staffs are somewhat ideologically balanced. I mean, people gravitate towards journalism and reporting, tend to be to the left of center overwhelmingly. And so that's just the fact of life. But if I were running the New York Times or the Washington Post, I'd be looking for a little bit of conservatism to throw into the mix, just in the terms of the way people perceive things.
Evidence before judgment. I think we can all agree on that, or maybe we did all agree on that. We'll see where it goes. Stuart Taylor with National Journal, thank you very much for being with us this hour, Stuart.
Thank you.
Hadas Gold at Politico, thank you, Hadas.
Thank you.
And Cynthia Allen at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.